BPM Tips.
Hello, this is Zbigniew Misiak from BPM Tips, and I'm very happy to speak today with Jim Boots. Jim worked at Chevron Corporation for 30 years in a wide array of functions including sales, total quality management, business development, supply chain management, business management, e-commerce management, health, safety and environment management, enterprise architecture, and business process management program development. He was the primary force behind building Chevron's BPM Foundation from 2005 to 2010. He's also principal IT-CMF professional at Innovation Value Institute, with responsibilities that include a role as lead architect at the BPM critical capability. He's an author of the book, BPM Boots on the Ground, How to Implement Strategic Business Process Management, Lessons Learned from One of the World's Largest Organizations, and co-author of a recent book, Questioning BPM. Jim runs his own BPM consultancy known as Global Process Innovation. Thanks a lot for joining me today.
Thank you, Zbigniew.
Jim, could you tell a bit about yourself and how do you help BPM practitioners?
Sure. Here's a very brief background on me. I have lived in many places around the world while growing up and during my career with Chevron. In 2010, after 30 years in a wide variety of specialist and management roles, I retired from Chevron and became an independent BPM consultant. BPM meaning business process management, of course. In the past 6 years, as a BPM consultant, I've worked with both large and small companies. In 2012, I published a practitioner's book on BPM called BPM Boots on the Ground, which you mentioned, and that is available on Amazon.com. With regard to how I help my clients, my objective is to help them build their own BPM capability that they can sustain and further build on long after my project with them ends.
Readers of my blog are often struggling with building BPM capabilities. Based on your experience, what is the best way to start a BPM initiative at a large organization?
That's a really good question, Zbigniew. The answer to that question depends on how mature an organization is in terms of BPM at the point where there is a decision to devote more resources to it. At a minimum, all those involved in trying to do a BPM project, so to speak, should undertake learning about BPM first. A great starting point for anyone is to read the 2016 publication available on Amazon entitled Questioning BPM, edited by Paul Harmon and Roger Treger. It addresses 15 important BPM questions from the perspectives of over 30 experts and practitioners. So it's really a good read, really helps people get a sense of what BPM is about. Beyond learning about BPM, practitioners who want to get started must realize that the single most important factor for the success of a project that has the objective of building sustainable BPM capability is the quality of executive sponsorship that they have. Perhaps in rare circumstances, it may be possible to leap from small, localized BPM efforts to enterprise-wide standards that facilitate a common BPM model. But it's certainly very hard to do so unless an organization has an active program of innovation that draws on distributed ingenuity to feed the center with ideas that create operational value. Since most organizations are not good at distributed innovation, sponsorship for a serious BPM effort almost always must come from the top of the organization. Ideally, a BPM initiative would be sponsored by the CEO or COO. However, in very large corporations, it's possible to imagine a robust BPM effort being sustained within a large business unit or division, so long as the effort is sponsored by the business unit's top executive and his or her management team. The hard reality is that almost all effort to increase BPM maturity that does not have sustained executive commitment and involvement is destined to plateau quickly, and most of the benefits achieved in the effort will not be lasting.
You touched a very important point, executive sponsorship, and I read your great article on Process Excellence Network about 5 critical success factors, where you also touched this point. What would you suggest to people who want to make the executives care about BPM? How to make them interested?
Yes, another great question. I've been searching for kind of the perfect BPM sales pitch for about 30 years now, and I still haven't found it. To some degree, I think an executive and his or her team must already be receptive to the idea of better process management. Indeed, the best situation is if one or more of the executives themselves create the management impetus to ignite the effort. However, for those practitioners who feel that they need to do quite a bit of nurturing of executive support for BPM, and I would venture to say that includes most practitioners, then I suggest they help their executives see and understand the vision for mature BPM that they have in mind. So ask yourself, do you expect your BPM initiative to be primarily about a series of process improvement projects, which would be fairly typical of a Lean Six Sigma-focused implementation? Or beyond that, do you want to document your process architecture using specialized software? In my opinion, for an organization to achieve the highest levels of BPM maturity, it almost certainly will commit to the use of such specialized software, which will become an organization-wide learning, collaboration, and work facilitation platform that people refer to all the time. If that is your vision, then quickly developing some compelling examples of process diagrams that would be part of the platform could be time well spent. The basic version of Q9 Elements software is free to use, simple to learn, and can produce intuitive process diagrams that might help executives understand the value of process clarity. So if you are persuasive with your example, perhaps your executives will then want you to document the process architecture for the entire organization. A commitment by top management to document the organization's process architecture would be a major milestone on the journey toward BPM maturity. So there are a couple of ideas about how to try to persuade executives. Again, just to summarize, it's always best if they kind of get it themselves and become the motive force behind it. If you're trying to persuade them, then perhaps providing them some examples of what it would mean in your organization would be helpful. And this free software that is out there could give you a jump start.
In a recent interview with Anna Gotz, you shared lots of great insights about process modeling. Since you mentioned how to motivate executives, what would you advise to people who want to make employees involved in creation of the process architecture?
Yeah, those things absolutely, in my mind, go together, too. I mean, you want the executive sponsorship, and you really want the executives to embrace a vision, I think, that involves all the employees of the organization. That's what's going to really, turn an organization into more process-oriented culture, is to have everyone involved and not just a few specialists. So once software for documentation of the process architecture has been chosen, if that is the vision you have in mind, involving employees then is a fairly straightforward concept. Process mapping should begin in areas that are most important to the organization and or are causing the biggest problems. Generally, between 1 and 3 subject matter experts from a group working in a given priority area will meet with someone who is skilled in the use of the mapping software and can facilitate the discussion that will allow the subject matter experts to describe their processes. Often, so as not to disrupt the normal flow of business, the sessions with SMEs, subject matter experts, are limited to 90 minutes and may happen no more than once per week. Typically, a good set of process diagrams for a given area are created over the course of 6 to 12 such sessions, sometimes fewer sessions or sometimes more, depending on the complexity of the underlying processes. An additional big benefit to this approach is that it can be done remotely, with every participant calling from his or her own location, in viewing their computer screens with the evolving process diagram on it. As the subject matter experts map their processes, it's typical for them to take pride in their process diagrams and want to get the diagrams right. Once enough of the mapping sessions have taken place, well-articulated process diagrams can then be deployed to employees with responsibilities in the process, and the diagrams can be treated as an ever-improving standard that everyone can contribute to.
You mentioned selecting processes which are most important. Are there any rules that help you decide which processes should be modeled, and how deep do you want to go?
Another great question, Sabignan. My preference is always to work on processes where management thinks the most value exists. Now, your question is kind of getting at, well, how do we know that? It would be great if organizations had all kinds of detailed metrics that help to pinpoint where the opportunities are. That's the exception, though. Most organizations don't have tremendous measurement of their processes or even where their problems are. But usually by talking to people, particularly the management team, they'll have a pretty good idea where the problems are or the high priority areas are where maybe money is being lost or incidents are occurring that are causing customers to be dissatisfied or what have you, those sorts of issues. So they become the priority processes. I mean, you can really sit with the management team probably in a half an hour and brainstorm where are we having our challenges, and you'll probably get pretty good agreement on where the highest priority processes are. So that's where I would start working in those areas. Now, the other question about, well, how deep do you go in terms of modeling your processes or mapping your processes? The simple answer, perhaps it's a bit obnoxious, is, well, you go as far down as you need to. You go into as much detail as is helpful to the people. And generally, the subject matter experts who you're working with are going to be able to tell you that. As they drill down, you're going to get to a level where you're getting very close to tasks, and you may ask the question, okay, do we need to decompose this process any further, or do we really all have a good understanding of what it means at this level of detail? And yeah, maybe we'll attach some checklist or some other little guidance document to the process, just for an additional aid, but we don't need to necessarily go down to another level of detail. So I try to discourage clients from getting too worried about what level of process detail we're on. The answer is just keep drilling down until it's all clear. And in my experience, that can be in any given process area between 3 and 4 levels of detail. All the way up to 7 or 8 levels of detail is not entirely unusual in very deep and complex processes.
Are there any good practices that you share with your customers concerning how big should the diagrams be in order not to make them too complex, too difficult to read?
Yeah, that's another good point. Absolutely. What we're really looking for with this way of documenting a process architecture is intuitive diagrams that all the employees can understand. So if it becomes really complicated and begins to look like some sort of electrical diagram, then you probably lost people, if they have to sit there for 20 minutes just to figure out where all the arrows are going and so forth. So you really do want to consider as you're doing your documentation, what's the right level of detail? Now, a rule of thumb for the number of activity boxes, if I can call them that, on a diagram, I would say would be between 3 and probably about 15 boxes at a maximum. Now, there are sometimes exceptions to that, but that's a pretty good way to judge whether you're getting too many. If you have more than 15 boxes on a diagram, it's going to get too complicated for most people to understand. Now, you may, as you're doing process mapping, and I've certainly experienced this, wind up working with a subject matter expert who is very detail-oriented, and so they tend to describe their process at a fairly low task level right from the beginning. So you may find that you have way more boxes on your diagram than I've just talked about, that maybe you have 25 or 30 boxes to describe the process. Well, one of the great things you can then do, and certainly the software I've talked about facilitates it, and say, okay, well, can we group some of these activities together and describe them at a little bit higher level and push them down into a lower level of decomposition and simplify the diagram we're on? By taking that approach, you're really helping people to see the forest rather than being right amidst all the trees. And actually, that's the way people tend to think. People tend to think hierarchically. It's pretty natural. They want to get the big picture first, and then as they understand that, they go into more detail where they need to see that greater detail. So that would be a general guideline I would have, is somewhere between 3 and 15 boxes, and generally preferably 10 or less boxes. It just makes it easier for people to read on any given diagram, and then push the details down to a lower level of decomposition.
Thanks a lot. After over 30 years of working with BPM, you must have seen many, many failed BPM attempts. What are the most common errors that you see in organizations starting with BPM, and what would you suggest them instead to avoid those errors?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of a tough question to answer because there are so many ways that organizations can go wrong with BPM and fail to achieve the value that it promises. One common scenario is if BPM is seen as something that is of primary concern to the IT organization, and I've seen that in many companies. When that happens, the processes focused on tend to be primarily those that are transactional and are thus subject to IT automation and controls. Such an approach represents only one narrow slice of BPM capabilities, so I usually see it as a shame when BPM is stuck in an IT organization. Instead, a robust BPM effort should have a broad-driven approach with the top echelon of the business's managers actively supporting it. Not to say that that IT can't get benefits from BPM. It absolutely can, as all functions can. It's just that it shouldn't be constrained to just an IT perspective. And just to expand on that concept a little bit more, some people tend to equate BPM with automation, and that's why it tends to get stuck in IT departments, because that's what they do to some degree. But frankly, if you look at most organizations, the vast majority of their activities are not automatable, really, to some degree. They really involve people and probably are going to involve people for a long time to come. They're manual, if I can use that term. And so what you're really trying to do with a robust BPM effort is address, all the processes that people are involved in, not just the things that machines do. And that includes many types of activities. Anything from manufacturing to planning to the sales function, you name it. It's everything, ultimately, not just addressing your transactional processes.
Thanks a lot. And the final question, what useful resources would you like to recommend to people interested in BPM?
Yeah, I mentioned the book Questioning BPM. That would be a good start, and if you want even more detail, you can check into my book, BPM Boots on the Ground. I also recommend listeners to go to q9elements.com so they can register and play around with this free process mapping software that I mentioned. I think most people would find that it's much more powerful than something like Visio, for example. Another active opportunity is for any listener out there to email me. I would then set up a no-charge conference call to discuss the particulars of that person's situation. So there's no obligation and no risk, nothing but upside for those who contact me. If you would like to take advantage of that opportunity, simply write to my email address, which is jimboots.gpi@gmail.com. That's jimboots, J-I-M-B-O-O-T-S, .gpi, as in global process innovation, @gmail.com. And, you know, just shoot me a message. You can ask questions or just say you'd like to have a brief chat, and we'll arrange that and be glad to talk with you about the challenges that you're facing in your BPM efforts.
Thank you very much for an interview.
You're welcome, Zubin. It's a pleasure.
If you enjoyed this interview, head over to bpmtips.com/podcast to find more episodes.